It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's official. 2014 was Earth's hottest year on record. And if it sounds like you've heard that before, it's because you have. It's the third time it's happened in the past 15 years. For the past quarter century, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has been gathering data from more than 400 scientists around the world on climate trends. The report on 2014 shows that, on average, it was the hottest year ever in the ocean and on land. What is causing this trend? Can it be reversed? And if so, how? I'm joined now in studio by John Radzilowicz. He's an advisor to the Science Communication Group at CMU. John, good to have you back. How are you?
Hi, very good. Good to be here.
Comments, questions, call us, 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. As part of the climate statement released late last week, John, a NOAA spokesman said it's the lower atmosphere that's warming, not the upper atmosphere. Explain the significance of this.
That's right. One of the big arguments that has been made against global warming and climate change has been the idea that this is a cycle that the sun is going through and its energy output is increasing, and therefore it's a natural cycle. We can't do anything about it. Well, if that were the case, you would see the upper atmosphere warm first, then the lower atmosphere, then the ocean. And in fact, what we're seeing is it's the ocean and lower atmosphere that's warming. In fact, the upper atmosphere is getting cooler in places. And the reason for that is that the greenhouse gases are trapping the heat, and so not as much as going out again. So it's really sort of an indicator that this is absolutely about greenhouse gases. This is absolutely about anthropogenic global warming. People are causing this, not the sun.
And if it were due to the sun or some orbital phenomenon, we would be seeing what?
You'd actually be seeing the upper atmosphere warming first. So you'd expect to see higher temperatures in the upper atmosphere before they reached what we're seeing in the lower atmosphere, and that is not the case.
So with a lot of extra heat being trapped in the lower atmosphere, the ocean, we're being told, is sucking up that heat and getting warmer.
That's great. It's a great heat sink. So that's what's happening. And about the first 200 feet or so especially is pulling in that heat and will continue to do so. And those temperatures will reach lower and lower as that happens.
Is that why we're seeing shark attacks in North Carolina where the water is normally cold, for example?
I would say I don't like to pick any one particular incident and say, well, look, there you go. But what we see overall is happening is if you start pumping energy into the system and you start changing the patterns of how currents flow, how winds flow, where the hot pockets and cool pockets are, of course, some animals are going to shift to that. And so some people have said, and I'm not an expert in sharks, but I have seen biologists who have said that's part of what we're seeing. The pattern is changing in terms of where they're going because of the warmer water. They're following that path.
In the Pittsburgh area, we're having record rains this summer. Are warmer temperatures part of what's causing this? And I mean, the air has been humid. We've had a lot of rain, and people are wondering why. Is this due in part to this trend that's been identified by NOAA?
Yes, it is. And one of the things that had been predicted was that our area would get long-term hotter and wetter. And that's part of what we're seeing. What's interesting to me that people have to think about this, when you talk about climate, all over the planet you have hot and cold zones and wet and dry zones. They change seasonally. Those kinds of patterns have existed. Now that we are changing the overall temperature of the planet and changing the dynamic with the climate, we still have zones that are hotter and cooler and wetter and drier, but they're shifting. And so people look at this and they say, well, shouldn't every place get hotter and drier? No, the patterns are going to shift around. And one of the things that's going to happen in our area is it gets wetter. The temperatures will overall come up, but you've seen this cold trend that's been running not just in our area, but the whole Northeast the last year. You saw the same pattern happening in Russia. But if you take a look over in Europe, they've been roasting there, hitting record-setting temperatures for the last year. So what happens is the patterns are shifting as the overall temperature rises for the planet.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with John Radzilowicz, advisor to the Science Communication Group at CMU. We have Leela on the line from Squirrel Hill. Leela, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to make a comment since I just returned from Antarctica as a member of the scientific team to understand the type of research that's going on and the different aspects such as the acidification of oceans, the melting of glaciers, rising sea levels. All that work is going on. It was the scientists in Antarctica who first discovered the hole in the ozone layer. And it is their work that prompted legislators to prevent the dumping of carbon tetrachloride and freon into the oceans. Now, what we can do about climate change is to increase scientific funding and also to appreciate, understand, and celebrate the scientific research that's going on all over the world and not to deny that climate change is not occurring.
All right, Leela, she's saying that we can't deny what's happening. She's been there. She's been to Antarctica.
Absolutely.
And this is part of what was included in this report on 2014.
Yeah. And I thank you for your contribution. And I think that's an important point for people to understand. You referenced the fact that this NOAA report was done by over 400 scientists, nearly 60 countries. You have all of these people contributing the different puzzle pieces that goes on. If you look at the reports that have come out from the IPCC, they generally run 1,000 scientists. So we have many, many people doing this good kind of work, and that's why we see this convergence and we know what's happening.
Now, of course, there are those who say, who argue with this, and who would deny, climate skeptics, who would say that, for example, the winter was especially cold, which led to the question of this whole idea of climate change. So what do you say to the skeptics?
Right. So it was exceptionally cold for us in the Northeast. But if you look again over the planet in many other areas, it was exceptionally hot. And it's all about the overall temperature of the planet, the overall increase in the energy that's in the weather systems that we're seeing. How those play out will be different in different areas. But I think those skeptics who say, well, look, oh, you know, we had such a cold winter. But look at the pattern that we've had. The hot to cold switches, the increase in the rain, as you pointed out. Take a look at the last 4 or 5 months in Pittsburgh. Is this a normal pattern that you've seen before? I would say it's highly volatile and it's clearly changing.
We're talking with John Rodzilowicz, advisor to the Science Communication Group at CMU, about a report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration gathering data again from more than 400 scientists around the world on climate change, on climate trends. And the report on 2014 shows that on average, it was the hottest year ever in the ocean and on land, and that this is the third time it's happened in the past 15 years. You can join the conversation with a question or comment at 412-246-2002. Again, 412-246-2002. John, we had a caller in the previous segment who said that we need to improve when it comes to understanding the intricacies of the legislature and how it works, that we need better teaching about political science and government and politics. When it comes to an issue like this, do young people in particular need to be better educated about the problems that exist as a result of climate change or global warming, and so that somebody can maybe get to work on a solution to this problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got lots of people working on solutions, and they've been doing it for two decades. But it's the government issue, as you point out. And I do think education makes a big difference. And I do think that we're seeing with the younger generation that they are understanding this better. In spite of what you hear, it's not a deficit model in terms of intelligence and content for a lot of them. What's really causing the problem that we see with deniers has to do with individual identity. It has to do with tribes. And if you take a look at the deniers, most of them are very well educated. They are reading the same papers that you're reading, but they're not disposed to being open to understanding what's going on because of their ties to the political community. I mean, if you ask people two questions, basically, if you ask them where they fall on the political spectrum and where they fall on the religious spectrum from liberal to conservative in both those areas, you can know with probably about 99% accuracy where they stand on global warming. So that's not an absence of information on the science side. That's understanding how politics needs to work, how social interaction needs to work.
Let's go to Dave from O'Hara Township. Dave, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with John Rodzilowitz.
Oh, thank you very much. John, I wanted to ask you a very provocative question, but something that I'm really worried about for my family and my descendants. Is there any reason to believe that we've hit a point of no return, or that we are soon to hit a point of no return? And how will we know when that point has happened, as far as climate change going in only one direction?
Right. Well, the fact of the matter is you're onto something really important, and that is this same report points out that the amount of carbon dioxide that you're seeing in the atmosphere is about 397 parts per million now. That's the latest count. And models have shown for quite some time now that most scientists have sort of agreed that this tipping point that you're referring to is probably right around 400 parts per million. So we're getting pretty close to that point, where some things are going to change that we are not going to be able to undo. But what I would say is that we shouldn't look at that and say, well, we're done for. That's not the situation. There are still changes that we can make. We don't understand all of the shifts that will occur. It's not as if everything is going to change instantly and we're going to see a collapse in society or anything like that. What you're going to see is something that's going to continue to happen over decades. And food supply is going to be an issue. We're going to see sea water rise, coastal cities, that's going to be an issue. We're going to see Indonesia again and Asia, where there's a lot of coastal population and island population. They're going to get hit first. And so what we're going to see is, unfortunately, like so many things in this world, it's going to hit the poorest segments of the society first. We still can make a change. And right now, one of the big things that's happening is we are seeing some governmental change finally with the new EPA rules that are being rolled out right now and the Clean Power Plan that's being put in place. And though there's debate about this and there are people in Congress who are trying to sink this effort, the recent Supreme Court rulings are not going to help them do that, and we might actually start to see some real change happening here. And what people need to do is they need to talk to their representatives. They need to let them know that they're concerned about this.
And if, in fact, as you're saying, the trend of global warming, of these temperatures, average temperatures rising on sea and on land, if they can be slowed down or reversed, what is the rate at which that has to happen to avoid some sort of catastrophe down the road? Is there an equation that and a measurement that has to be done in order to say, you know, we need to cut back emissions to this number in order to bring the temperature down to this number, or to slow global warming and greenhouse gas emissions to this rate?
Right. And again, it's a model rather than a formula that gives you a hard, fast answer. But this 400 parts per million has sort of been the milestone that we've been looking at. And the goal has been to stay below that number, if at all possible. But the amounts of changes that they're usually talking about is we think we'd need to see about a 30 to 50% change in emissions to begin to see a real reversal in what's happening. And we may be wrong about that number. It may be that some changes are going to be permanent already. We don't know that for sure. But we do still think that there's a chance to make it. And 30 to 50% change in emissions, that's a huge number. But that's the kind of change that we would need to see over the next decade or so to really start to roll things back.
And in the meantime, what are the chances that we'll be sitting here a year from now and saying 2015, the hottest year ever?
Very good. And that's really unfortunate, because as I've said many times, and you and I have talked about this on the program, the scientific consensus on this was reached in the early to mid 90s. When you take a look at this, the reason that NOAA has been doing this report for 25 years is because they've been concerned about this for 25 years. But our political system has not responded.
John Rodzilowitz is advisor to the Science Communication Group at CMU, also an adjunct instructor at the University of Pittsburgh. Joining us here in studio, John, good to have you back with us. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Coming up, we'll hear about a new street space in Squirrel Hill designed for performers and passersby. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.